Our text for today is verses 20 and 21. I'm going to begin reading at verse 18 and through verse 21 from Romans chapter 8. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. And this is our text for today. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. Useless is a word that I like to use. It is also the word that we have in verse 20. For the creation was subjected to futility. That word futility is the Greek word mataiotes. It's in your notes there. It means vanity. That may be the translation that it's in that some of you have. It is a word that means inutility or useless for that matter. In other words, this is the gist of that word. Something that does not measure up to that for which it was intended. Something that does not measure up to that for which it was intended. And that is the condition of creation in which we live today. It is the condition of the natural man as well. Something that does not measure up to that for which it was intended. In other words, it is inherently unsuccessful. That's the nature of creation today. It is a very real source of frustration. And yes, I think we can all say that life can be very frustrating at times. And there's a reason for that. Now, I want to look at four ways that vanity or inutility has come to the creation. Not only the physical creation around us, but to us as human beings as well. First of all, is probably the most obvious to us, and that is physically or materially. Physically or materially. Not just us, but the creation around us. The law of entropy stands. And we know that. In other words, the physical creation is corruptible. It is passing away. And that's using the biblical terminology from 1 Corinthians 15 and also from 2 Peter. Science calls it breakdown or entropy, as I mentioned before. The breakdown of matter and energy. Not only our bodies, but all around us. The more years pass by, the more we recognize it ourselves physically. Isn't that the truth? Not only is vanity set in physically or materially in the world, in ourselves, but also speaking more specifically of humanity, which is man's highest creation. Vanity has set in mentally or intellectually. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 and 18 speak of the natural man operating in the futility of their mind, their understanding being darkened. The futility of the mind with a darkened understanding. Man's thinking, man's intellect has been darkened. Man's intellect is limited by nature because he's a created being. But even beyond that, because of the curse, because of the creation being subjected to futility, man's mind and understanding have been darkened. And we're going to see what is it that points to that. What is it that is the cause of that here in just a couple of minutes. But man's mind is in a process of degeneration, and you think, well, wait a minute, I'm going to college. I'm learning things. I'm going to become smarter and more intelligent. Yeah, but I believe that as history has gone on, man's capacity to be intelligent has diminished over the time. Consider this, the Great Pyramids of Egypt that were built thousands of years ago without the technology that we have today. Do you think that those could possibly be built today absent the technology that we have? I don't know. It's just a thought. But you think about that. No extra charge for that. But you take that home as homework. several other examples like that. But the mind has been darkened. The understanding has been darkened. And so there is a mental, there is an intellectual deficiency in the mind, the intellectual and mental capacities of mankind. Thirdly, there is vanity spiritually. There is uselessness. There is inutility. Something that does not measure up to that for which it was intended spiritually. Now, this is specifically and exclusively speaking of mankind. John 3, verses 18 and 19 tell us that man is condemned because we have not believed, because men love darkness rather than light. Now, there that leads us back to the darkened human mind in its natural state. So there is a spiritual vanity there. There is a spiritual inutility. The fourth is, once again, exclusively a human problem. And that is the vanity existentially. What do I mean by that? Meaning and purpose of existence. There is vanity in it for natural man. You can keep your finger in Romans chapter 9 and look back with me to the book of Ecclesiastes back in the Old Testament. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. So go to Proverbs and turn right. Look in the first chapter with me. We're just going to look at a few selected verses. Now, this was written somewhere in the neighborhood of almost 1,000 years before Christ came on the earth. At least the subject matter of it is from that time, because I believe it is surrounding the man Solomon. And it is a compilation of his writings and some of his conclusions at which he arrived. Now, you remember about Solomon, he was considered one of the wisest men on earth because he asked God for wisdom. The problem was, towards the end of his life, he didn't act according to that wisdom. And so he was searching. So consider his words in verses 1 to 4. We'll look at beginning at verse 2. Vanity of vanities. The synonyms of this word vanity in the Hebrew, are absurdity, frustration, futility, and nonsense. So what is he saying? Now, he's king in Jerusalem. And he says this, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. Doesn't sound very hopeful, does it? Look at verse 11. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. In essence, he's saying, we just go through life and nothing comes of it. There's really no aim, there's no objective, there's no purpose. Look over in chapter 2. Let's look at verses 10 and 11. This was his ambition. I'm going to find meaning, I'm going to find purpose. Look what he says. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed it was all vanity. Absurdity, frustration, futility, nonsense. And grasping for the wind. It's a good word picture, isn't it? You can try to grab the wind. Keep trying. It's not going to happen, is it? There was no profit under the sun. This was this man's thoughts. It's kind of sad, isn't it? Consider this. With that kind of vanity, Sinclair Lewis won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1930. And yet, for all his renown and wealth, Lewis died in Rome of alcoholism. Now, this will show us the futility of the natural man, of humanity, physically, existentially, spiritually, mentally. His death in 1951 of alcoholism. Upon his death, he was cremated and his ashes sent to Rome's U.S. Embassy to be displayed. One morning, a visitor noticed a worker on her knees with a dustpan and broom. Next to her was an overturned urn. When asked what she was doing, she replied nonchalantly, "Sweeping up Sinclair Lewis." Wow. Sweeping up Sinclair Lewis. Consider the personal testimony of existential vanity by great men of history. Here, for example, is Ernest Hemingway. We all know who he is. That is, if you've done any reading. He was the epitome of the 20th century man. At the age of 61, after having it all, wine, women, song, a distinguished literary career, Hemingway chose to end his life, leaving a note saying, "Life is one bleeping thing after another." And that's all it was to him. Just one thing after another. No meaning, no purpose, no real objective. Just one bleeping thing after another. How sad. Woody Allen, maybe not somebody you necessarily admire, but he said it very poignantly. "The fundamental thing behind all motivation and all activity is the constant struggle against annihilation and against death. Death is absolutely stupefying in its terror, and it renders anyone's accomplishment meaningless." It's not a very happy way to live, is it? But it's true. Apart from the source of life, what meaning can there be? This is the dilemma. This is what brought about the curse that we read about in Genesis chapter 3. What is it that happened? Well, look what it says here in Romans chapter 8, verse 20. "The creation was subjected to futility, not willingly." Not willingly. So when he speaks there in verse 20 of the creation, he's not speaking specifically of mankind. He's speaking of the rest of physical creation. Because only man willfully chose independence from God. Only man willfully chose independence from God. The rest of creation was subjected to it, but subjected with an expectation of renewal, with expectation of view towards renewal. God subjected it to that futility. In other words, the human choice to dismiss God, because that's what we read about in Genesis chapter 3. God has said, and they decided to transgress those loving boundaries that the Father had set for them. And they said, "We know better. We're going to get what we're not allowed to have." And the human choice to dismiss God was met with a consequence of creation that manifests the process of decay. What is decay? Decay is life disconnected from the source. Life disconnected from the source. Folks, that is the curse. So, in one sense, you could say that even though we sang, "This is my Father's world," even though the wrong seems oft so strong, God is the ruler yet. We can still say that though He is the benevolent sovereign creator, there is a sense in which we can say that all of creation is manifesting a sense of being disconnected from the very source of life. That's the curse. And it came about because of the choice, the willful choice of humanity, of Adam and Eve. Life disconnected from the source. The words of Ephesians 4 is alienated from the life of God. Alienated from the life of God. In other words, the corruptible all around us, and even our own physical bodies, the corruptible that is perishing, is related to the self-focus of the human soul. So these statements that I just read from Allen, from Ernest Hemingway, Sinclair Lewis, the decay of the corruptible that is perishing is related to the self-focus of the human soul. Because only man willfully chose independence from God. And that brought us then into the bondage of corruption. We are slaves to corruption. We are slaves to this decay. We are slaves to this fact that life has been disconnected from God. And we live in such an environment. Very important to understand that. The bondage of corruption just simply means this. Everything is perishable. Everything. Everything is breaking down. You and your whole environment. What God has done, in essence, is He has said this. He said this to Adam and Eve, and therefore, through them, to us. I'm going to let you have a taste of the consequences of your choice. Life disconnected from the source. I'm going to let you have a taste of the consequences of your choice. Is this what you want? How you like it? Or as they would say today, how's that working out for you? Life disconnected from the source. Once again, the frustrating character of the physical creation is related to the condition of the human soul. God provided for man a dying environment for dying man. So that we would understand that the reason why creation is as it is because, in a sense, it is disconnected from the very source of life, the very one who is the source and the sustainer of life. Statistics are clear. One in one people die. No exceptions. With a few, except for a few that God has allowed throughout history. But even we, if we are to be caught up in the rapture, something must happen then. And what is that? I have to shed this. Thankfully. I have to shed it. Because God's going to give me a new one that will last for eternity. Because this one can't make it. I guarantee you now, this one's not going to make it very much past 80. And I'm more than halfway there. But listen, this is something that we need to understand. We live in a dying environment for dying man. Did you read the note on the back of the grace vine this morning? It's about Paul Azinger, PGA golfer. I want to consider one note, and this is by Larry Moody, who taught Bible studies on the PGA Tour. And Larry Moody said this to Paul Azinger, who was in recovery from cancer, who discovered that he had cancer, and he realized he was going to die from cancer. And then the thought hit him, you know what? I'm going to die anyway. Whether it's cancer or not, I'm going to die. It's an important realization, isn't it? How many people walk around today in denial of that fact? This life is short. It's going to end. Paul said, I'm going to die. And Larry Moody said this, Zinger, and that was his nickname, Zinger, we're not in the land of the living going to the land of the dying. We're in the land of the dying trying to get to the land of the living. How is that for a paradigm shift? That's good. That's exactly what it is. The whole point of Paul's letter to the church at Rome is simply this. This is how you get from the land of the dying to the land of the living. That's the whole point of Romans. And this is what he's telling us in Romans chapter 8, that we live in the land of the dying. The environment is dying. Man is dying. But we can get to the land of the living. Let's remember that. Listen, it is at this point that science becomes inadequate. What can science do? Science can observe and point out and demonstrate and outline how the universe is breaking down. And specifically, our immediate universe, the world around us, people and the environment, it is breaking down. And you might see some of these on the History Channel, on World National Geographic or something like that. They show these documentaries of how things might be, you know, where the Earth gets farther away from the sun, or the moon gets closer to the Earth, and all these things, and how things might happen, and humanity dies off, and how what the Earth just becomes a complete wasteland, and what it looks like out in the future. You see, God's given us revelation to know what's going to be happening in the future. But the truth of the matter is, the universe is dying. It's running out of energy. As we are, physically. But see, that's all science can tell us. And this is where science becomes inadequate. Why is that? Because the Creator has spoken. The Creator has said, "Behold, I make all things," what? New. The Creator has spoken. "Behold, I make all things new." And this is what Paul speaks of in here when he says, because the creation, verse 21, "The creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." Why is he focusing on the children of God? Because only humanity can have that title, and humanity is the highest point of God's creation. All the rest of creation was for our benefit. Even the stars and the galaxies. But God has given us a glimpse of this glorious liberty of the children of God. All that we can observe now is that the universe is dying. The world is dying. It is fading away. Its energy is being dissipated. But the Creator has said, "Behold, I make all things new." He's given us a glimpse of this. 3 points on that, the 3 bullet points in your notes. First of all, the Creator came to us and did miraculous things. The Creator came to us in the person of the historic Jesus Christ and did miraculous things. What are some of the things that he did? Well, all the miracles. Well, specifically, a miracle was something intentionally done by God to override the laws of nature that he has established. And he overrides those laws. And he does it for a very specific purpose, to lead people to understand that the one performing this miracle is the one who is sovereign over life and all of nature. When Jesus did the miracle, it was not just because he felt sorry and wanted to do something good for somebody. He was making a statement. It was, "I am the sovereign over nature, and I can override these laws, and I can make all things new. And I'm giving you a glimpse of it right now." It's good news. The greatest miracle of them all was the resurrection. That's bullet point number 2, the resurrection. What is the resurrection? It is overriding the power of death. That's where we're all headed, physical death. And for those who have not surrendered themselves in faith to Jesus Christ, they're headed for a spiritual death as well. Not annihilation, but an eternity separate from God. And Jesus conquered that. So the resurrection, the greatest miracle of them all, is the answer to what Paul Azinger calls the problem of the 6-foot hole. He's given us a glimpse, hasn't he? But now is Christ risen from the dead and has become the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. The third bullet point is this. All of these are attesting signs to the fact that He, the Creator, can transform man into something new. The Creator can transform man into something new. And these are the attesting signs to that. What does that mean? He has become the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. That when Christ walked out of the grave, He was then the first fruits, the first man to be human and then glorified, who will live in such a way for eternity. And you and I will be just like Him the day that we meet Jesus face to face. What a glorious thought. And I can have confidence that that is my future because history has happened and Jesus walked out of the grave. That's my confidence. He's given us a glimpse. That is my hope. Therefore, I am not living in despair. I am living in hope, a confident expectation, earnest expectation. These are the words of the apostle. And that means that in my future, I will be perfectly functioning according to design and intent. There will not be vanity. But I will be functioning perfectly according to design and intent, free from the penalty and the power and the very presence of anything corruptible or anything that could be called sin, that which is contrary to the character and purpose of God. Free from all that, in every sense. That's perfection. That's my future. That is the future of everyone here who has surrendered themselves in faith to Jesus Christ. Otherwise, there is nothing but vanity, futility, and despair. Paul gives us a rundown of this truth that comes of the new creation, of the Lord making man new. We see this in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 3, where Paul speaks of, as an apostle, he is speaking of authority, his authority to minister as a representative of Jesus Christ, to establish truth and to correct error. And Paul said, people were looking for his credentials. We need something in writing. And Paul said, I'm not going to give you something in writing. He says, what I have, he writes to the Corinthian church, and he says, you know what my credentials are for public ministry? It is the transformed lives of you in the Corinthian church. You were vain, useless pagans at one time, and now you have been transformed and you are committed followers of Jesus Christ. Those are my credentials, Paul says. Because remember what he thought about his credentials earlier? I consider them but rubbish, that I may gain Christ. Christ was his credentials. The fact that he had been reconciled to God through Jesus Christ. And then if you go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I want you to turn there with me. This is a beautiful passage. 2 Corinthians 4. In verse 6. 2 Corinthians 4, 6, for it is God who commanded light to shine out of darkness. What is that? What is he speaking of there? Creation. God said, let there be what? Light. The Creator. For it is God who commanded light to shine out of darkness, who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. The Creator himself has created something within me. He has created something brand new within me. You see, this is the glimpse that God has given us. And then he brings this right around to the title that has been given us in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 17. And we all know that verse, don't we? Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is what? A new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things become new. New creations. Not renovated, not cleaned up. New. And this is the promise. Behold, I make all things new. And when he says, behold, I make all things new, he means all things. The earth, the universe, but specifically humanity. Now listen to this, loved ones. I'm speaking specifically to you who are Christians in this room this morning. When the Creator, Jesus, said, behold, I make all things new, he's already begun that. And where is it? It's right here. It's right in here. The fact that he calls me a new creation means that he has begun to make all things new, and he's begun it right in here, right within me. Through redemption and justification and righteousness in Jesus Christ alone. All things new. Therefore, I am called a new creation. Jesus spoke of the term regeneration in Matthew 19. He spoke of in the regeneration, meaning when everything is brand new, speaking of all of creation, when everything is brand new, he says, in the regeneration, you will see the Son of Man sitting on the throne of his glory. There's another time that word regeneration is used, and that's in Titus chapter 3. Not by works of righteousness, which we have done, but according to his mercy, he saved us. Through the washing of what? Regeneration. You see, that newness has begun, and it begins in the heart and mind of those who have surrendered themselves in faith to Jesus Christ. New creations. This is why he says, creation itself will also be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. The glorious liberty of the children of God. That is our hope. That was the view when creation was subjected to futility. It was that God had in mind. The glorious liberty of the children of God. It is that to which we have been predestined. Because God knew of our surrendered faith to Jesus Christ. That is the glorious liberty of the children of God. So here is the point. Physical creation is under a curse because of the free, willful choice of humanity. God placed dying man within a dying environment. And you know what? We should thank him for that. What would become of you if you were a dying person living in an absolutely perfect environment? You'd spoil yourself to death. And you'd never know of your need for God and his redemption. But God placed dying man in a dying environment. And here's the point, the glorious liberty of the children of God. When redeemed man is glorified, creation will be too. As I said before, everything is perishable. But listen to this. You don't have to be. Everything is perishable, but you don't have to be. Because God has provided a remedy. The loving, benevolent, sovereign Creator Redeemer has provided a remedy. And that is what is true, that remedy exists within those of us who are new creations. And as new creations, liberated children of God, listen, we have something to offer. Remember we said before, the one who is most spiritually minded is, in fact, the most earthly good? Because we have something to offer this world. Our contribution to this world has eternal implications. It should be that way. And so, that is our mission, to be salt and light, because we are new creation. And so those of us who are new creation, God is in the process of making all things new, and it begins right in here. Therefore, what is our response to the futility and the vanity that exists around us? and even on us. What is our answer to that? Well, let's unpack that for just a minute, these four points here as we end. The physical. What is our answer to the physical futility of the creation? Well, first of all, creativity. We ought to be creative in terms of the environment around us, in terms of art. Let's be creative. Let's remember who the reference point is for all of it and why it was created. But also in terms of the physical, let's offer compassionate aid to those who are hurting, because we recognize that the physical creation is breaking down. And that's why we can offer compassionate aid to those who are hurting and suffering from the effects of physical breakdown. How about the mental and intellectual vanity? What is our response? What is our answer as new creations? What is our answer to the mental and intellectual futility that exists around us? It should be intellectual stimulation anchored and exploring the far reaches of the infinite reference point, and that's God Himself. I want you to listen to this. This is one of my favorite quotes. This is by William Dembski, who is a leading proponent of the intelligent design movement. He says this: Christ has assumed the fullness of our humanity and entered every aspect of our reality. He thereby renders all our studies the study of Himself. If you're about to start school or you have just started school, I'd like you to remember that. Parents, let me pull over and park here for just a minute. One of the biggest favors you can do for your children is to provide for them motivation and an environment in which they build and develop their creativity and their intellectual capacities. Amen. That does not include SpongeBob, among many others. What is informing the mind of the young generation today? They ought to be fostering, and we as parents ought to be fostering, intellectual stimulation anchored in the sovereign Creator. And aesthetic capacities, creativity. Let them think. Let them create. Let them use their minds. TV is not helpful in this arena, folks. We should be limiting it significantly. Football's okay, but you know. My daughter calls it fat men in tights, doing group hugs and tackling each other. I have a different idea of it, but anyway. That was just an aside, though. But listen, as new creations, we have something to offer the dying environment around us. What is our answer to the spiritual vanity of the world? We, as new creations, can communicate forgiveness, grace, and unconditional love. And we do it to others because God has lavished it upon us. That, as new creations, is our answer to the vanity, the spiritual vanity of the world around us. What is our answer to the existential vanity to the creation around us? As new creations, we operate with the mind of Christ, with the joy of serving others, putting others before yourself, beginning in the context of genuine community, the church. The church is the answer to existential vanity. At least it ought to be. Let me just end with the illustration of, I've mentioned him here recently, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I just finished reading his biography by Eric Metaxas. I encourage you to read it. It's very enlightening historically, but it's also very motivating in terms of what it truly means to be a disciple, a joyful disciple of Jesus Christ, even in the most dire of circumstances. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was hanged when he was 39. And he was hanged by the Gestapo because of his involvement in the resistance of the Nazis, because of their oppression to the Jewish people. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer devoted himself and his life to help those who were being oppressed by this dark and devious regime. "Who stands fast," wrote Bonhoeffer, "only the man whose final standard is not his reason, his principles, his conscience, his freedom, or his virtue, but who is ready to sacrifice all this when he is called to obedient and responsible action in faith and in exclusive allegiance to God. The responsible man who tries to make his whole life an answer to the question and call of God." That's not despair, is it? You know where he wrote this? In prison. He spent 18 months in prison. And then he was taken to, what's the name of it? Buchenwald. And then he was taken to Flossenbürg, where he was hanged. And he wrote this in prison. And after studying him extensively, the author, Eric Metaxas, says this about Bonhoeffer. "He redefined the Christian life as something active, not reactive. It had nothing to do with avoiding sin or with merely talking or teaching or believing theological notions or principles or rules or tenets. It had everything to do with living one's whole life in obedience to God's call through action. It did not merely require a mind, but a body too. It was God's call to be fully human, to live as human beings obedient to the one who had made us, which was the fulfillment of our destiny. It was not," I love this, "it was not a cramped, compromised, circumspect life, but a life lived in a kind of wild, joyful, full-throated freedom. That was what it was to obey God." That, folks, is not vanity. Even though we live in the land of the dying, we can be headed to the land of the living, and this is how. We have something to offer. Because the creation itself will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. We have the high privilege of playing a very significant part of that equation. What a high calling that is. And how much that helps us understand and perceive reality for what it is today. Instead of walking along just trying to make it through the day, instead of walking along just another time around the circle, we move along with hope and confidence and expectation, knowing what lies ahead. And that frees us from the distractions of despair, pleasure, and all of these things that can take our eyes off the goal. What a wonderful truth that is.